What do you think it means to be a person?
I don't know.
Me either. Really. Say scratch that again.
Scratch that a fan.
I'm Caitlin Metz, a non-binary illustrator and designer.
I'm Rebecca Tossig, a disabled storyteller and writer.
And this is Scratch That, Parenting and Reparenting Off Script.
A podcast for people trying to parent and person at the same time.
Head over to our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast, for show notes and a transcript of today's episode, and also to join the conversation.
Thank you for being here. Hi, friend.
Happy Monday.
Here we are, staring down a really tornado conversation. Before hitting record, we were just kind of swirling around in it, trying to sort out what it is that we even want to prioritize talking about. But our question for today is like, how do we talk to our kids about the scary shit going on in the world? This has been coming up for us for a while. I mean, like really since Otto first started asking us about death. But more recently, he has a lot of questions about like floods and tornadoes. Just the other night, we were reading this book together that mentions war, and there's this dad being separated from his wife and his daughter, and Otto turns to me and asks, is war real? And then, will war ever happen here? Just, you know, like casual bedtime conversation. This is coming up more and more for us. And right now, like every time I open my phone, there is another fresh tragedy or crisis. So much violence, so much fear, tragedy, loss. I was kind of prompted to bring this to you after pickup last week. I picked up Otto last week, and one of the parents just gave me the casual like, hey, how you doing? And because I don't know how to be chill in the world, I was like, you know, things aren't great. It just sort of prompted this hallway conversation with a group of parents of like, kind of, how are we talking about all of this with our kids? And it really struck me that like, I think all of the parents in the hallway had the same weight, the same question and confusion around the question of like, how do we do this? And every parent had sort of a different way they were doing it. And I totally saw the value in each of them, even though they were quite different from each other. And it kind of brought to the surface a question that I've already been thinking about, but just seeing all of the parents together kind of grappling with that, made me think maybe more people would benefit from an open conversation with naming kind of how we're thinking about it without any authority or certainty to say this is the correct way to do it. I think we don't, I don't know anyone who feels totally that way right now. So how do we talk to our kids about the scary stuff going on in the world right now? 1, 2, 3, tell us.
Well, when you brought me this, you texted me about this question and I was like, that sounds like the scariest fucking thing. And also, yes, I want to talk about it. And I feel terrified. It feels, for some reason, it just feels like super vulnerable and terrifying, because I'm not sure that I'm doing it right. And it matters. I feel like it matters so much. The stakes feel really high. And I guess like the judgment about getting it wrong feels really high. And because it matters, that judgment matters to me. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I want to. Okay. So, how would you know, or what would it mean, or what would it look like to get it right or get it wrong?
I feel like that's what I don't know. I don't know what is. I know what we're doing And I know I'm starting to know what feels not great about it, like where I want to pivot. Mm-hmm. But I don't know the right answer. I feel like really perplexed. I feel super perplexed about how to talk about how to engage with what's happening in the world, both for myself and for my child. I feel like I don't know how to do this just as a 36-year-old. Like, am I? Sometimes I'm like, I'm not aware enough. I'm not engaged enough. I'm not participating. And then other times it's like, I've got to pull back. Like, this is not healthy for me. So I feel a lot of conflict. I wonder, I think this is it, is that I feel super conflicted about it for myself. And so I don't know how to bring that to my child. There are a lot of sticky, hard conversations that actually excite me to have with my kid, like where do babies come from and questions about gender and emotions and sexuality. Like, that shit does not scare me. Charlie was asking some super specific questions recently about how, specifically, how does a baby, how is it parts of two people? And I was like, great, let's get into it. Let's talk about this. And so the things that I feel steady about myself, I feel really steady sharing with him. And the things, this I don't feel steady about at all for me. So how in the world do I tell my kid?
And one of the things that seems really different about all the conversations you named and sort of like what we've described as the scary stuff going on in the world is that, you know, talking about gender and sexuality and where do babies come from, those aren't like horrifying things. Those are like, you know, those are beautiful things. And like, there's a lot of joy in that and thinking this is different. And I think part of the thing that you named is like, I don't know how to process this myself. And thinking about, we both have 4 and 5-year-olds. So thinking, what is even good for them to take on, or what is even useful? What are they even developmentally able to process? What's the appropriate amount of information for them to know? And I think I also kind of heard you a little bit, and tell me if I'm misreading you, but is that sort of like, I want to be careful about not putting too much on him. And also, I don't want to be irresponsible with neglecting things he should know. Like, what is the balance between those things? And what is the age in which I share what?
I think the rate and the amount of horrors that we have access to knowing is too much for a 4, 5, 6, 7-year-old.
Yeah.
It's too much for me. And also, at the same time, I'm like, a lot of these really terrible, horrible things are happening to children his age, like if they're old enough. And also, like, I want for them to have, like, the things I want for my child are the same things I want for him. And I don't know that just because there are horrors happening to people his age that he necessarily needs to know all of that. And that feels sticky and messy. And yeah, I'm trying to figure out, like, what is the right, how much can he hold? What is the right amount to share with him? How do I teach him things? And somehow woven up in this is the way that I was raised, like being put on the side of streets with picket signs.
Right.
I thought a lot about that. For Trans Day of Visibility, I took Charlie to a little super family friendly protest right in our neighborhood. And he was like kind of whiny, like didn't really want to be there. He thought we were marching and he was really disappointed that we were standing still. He had like made a stop sign to help keep people safe because we were going to be walking by the road. And so it wasn't what he expected. And I was just thinking about like, oh, do I want to be forcing him to be somewhere holding up a specific ideal that, because I was put in some really sticky situations. And so that feels like it complicates it too. Like, how much do I want to share things with him in a way that he can form his own opinion and that his sense of belonging in our home is not contingent upon him believing exactly what I do. And also there are some really important vital things that I want to teach him and they're related to the horrors going on in the world. That was like a soup of feelings.
Yeah. I was also on the picket lines as a young thing. On the streets of Overland Park with signs. And it didn't even occur to me that I would, you know, it was like, of course I would hold this sign this is what our family believes kind of thing. I also remember, I have this very distinct memory. Okay. What year was Clinton elected president?
Oh my God. I don't remember. I'm trying to remember like how old I was because I have such visceral memories of how much my parents hated Clinton.
You do? Okay. Okay. Yes.
We called him Billy Joe and it was really, it was very confusing to me because previous presidents, because you guys had the radio on, and whenever the president was speaking on the radio, everyone had to shut the fuck up. Like, you were respectful, you were quiet. And it was like a hard rule. And then when Clinton was, that went out the window. Like, we didn't have to, we like made up nicknames for him.
Oh, wow.
And so that was, I was very, I was just so hyper aware of that shift.
Okay, it was 1992. How old were you in 1992?
I was born in 88.
Okay, I was 6. So you were 4.
Oh, wow.
You were 4 and I was 6.
Wow, it's strange that I have such a strong memory of
that. I do too, because I have this very vivid memory of being in the Walmart parking lot at night with my dad. And he turned on the radio and was listening to the election results. And it was like Clinton was going to win. And I remember my dad turning to me and saying, "This is the end of the world."
Oh, my God.
I remember it so vividly. And I was like, what? This is the end of the world? I don't know. I just bring that up to say, like, I think that is a layer to what I am trying to process is like how to talk to him about this in a way that it's similar to like how I talk to him about anything, which is like wanting him to know that there are multiple ways that people see this and not everybody sees it the same way. And also, I feel really strongly about some of the things that I see and believe right now. And so what do I impart to him in the mix of that and how? But I think another piece of this that makes it complicated is not it. So part of it is like there are things happening in the world and a lot of them don't directly affect us, right? And so there's that wanting to feel responsible, wanting to also protect as much as we can. Sometimes I find myself in these conversations that I'm not prepared for. And one of them recently was around guns. And I have no idea what the right answer for this is. But Otto, we were at somebody's house who had toy guns. And he ended up playing with these toy guns with other kids at this house. And afterwards, Mike and I were talking to him about that and saying, like, trying to explain that guns are not toys. And we don't play with them ever. And he's like, why don't we play with guns? And so we're like in real time trying to figure out like how much, like the questions we're asking now, how much does he need to know about this? And part of it for me is also thinking like, how much does he need to know? Because this is something that actually could affect anybody. And it feels closer and closer. You know, it just recently, what was it? There was a shooting in Kansas City at the Chiefs parade, at the Chiefs Super Bowl celebration parade. There, a friend of mine was at a Dollar Tree and there was a shooting and they all had to run to the back of the store in Kansas City. Like, this is not horrifyingly, it's like, this is not something that we're like immune to or somehow.
We don't want to scare them unnecessarily. And also, they need the tools to be equipped.
Yes.
To live within the reality of the world. Kind of feels like, I don't know if this is a tangent, kind of feels like how death has come up and been a really big thing, probably for like the last year. For a while, it was like very big. And Charlie was asking a lot about when we were going to die. And yesterday, we were walking to the park and we saw a very dead, mutilated rabbit laying in the middle of the sidewalk.
Oh, no.
And we had both dogs with us. So Andrew and I immediately were like pivoting away. And Charlie was like, why are we moving? And so we're like, well, there was a dead rabbit. And so we have to, and Charlie hadn't seen it. And so we were like trying to cross the street. And he was like, no, I really want to see it. And we're like, honey, it's like really yucky. You don't want to see it. And so Andrew and I were both like, no, we're not showing you this thing, to the point where it was like turning into this fight. And then Andrew and I looked at each other and it was just like, it's happens. Like, animals die. Like, if he super wants to see it. So we Then we like paused to explain to him what it would look like. And then Andrew walked him over to look at it. And that was kind of it. But I like this super strong instinct to just protect him from any kind of horror or discomfort. And I think that's like a good instinct. And also like that's not our role.
Mm.
Is not to shield them from every horror, because then one day they're just going to wake up and realize that guns exist.
Well, I think one thing that's interesting about the story that you told about, so interesting to me, because just yesterday we had a dead animal moment with Otto. Okay. And so it's interesting to me that how this went down for both of us. I didn't let Otto look at the dead animal yesterday. But what I think is interesting, though, is that in some ways, the thing that seems similar about it is, and this is wobbly, I don't think this is like a rule in by any means, but like a little bit of like taking your kid's lead a little bit. Like so Charlie was like begging to see,
mm-hmm.
and Otto didn't. So like I saw the dead animal. He didn't see it. It was in my parents' backyard. We'd come inside. I sent my dad out to go like take care of it. And Otto wanted to go outside. And I said, Otto, there's a dead animal out there. And I think it will give you nightmares. So I want you to stay inside. And he just was like, okay. And I think it's interesting, you know, like that.
Yeah.
What questions come up when, and what feels like that, I don't know, like if Otto had been begging, I don't know, maybe that would have felt different.
Well, and also you could have been like, just no, don't go outside, distract him, like and then he would have just known that something was weird. But you were honest. You were just like, there's a dead animal. I think it will give you a nightmare. And then he was like, he could have pushed back. Like, we're raising our kids in ways that they push.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That doesn't feel like what I know of you in parenting. You saying no because of this thing does not mean that Otto couldn't have also responded and reasoned with you.
Well, and he does have a lot of nightmares. It's like a big thing that we're in right now. So I think that he was like, oh, I don't want a nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it is following their lead.
A little bit. I mean, like not right. That's not a rule. It's not like just because they want it, then they're like, oh, of course you could, whatever. But like, I think that the interest and the questions and like what you said about Charlie having so many questions about death, Otto has had a lot of questions about death too. And I think when those questions are popping up, that means that we have to have some, like there has to be some engagement there. I think just shutting that down and saying, no, we're not going to look at that or talk about that. When you have these urgent questions bubbling up, I think in some ways that means like, okay, this is what the conversation we need to have. And then the next question is like, and what does that conversation look like? Otto has also had a lot of questions about death. And when are you going to die? And are you going to die before me? And oh my, I just want to say like, I'm never dying. We'll never be parted. You know, like I want to be able to have an answer like that. And so it's like, well, what's true? And how can we talk about this in a way that feels like the right shape, the right size for you?
Okay. What I'm hearing a sense of steadiness in us, or at least I'll speak for myself. I feel a relative sense of steadiness in discerning what and how to share with him of things that are directly present that we're engaging with. The part that feels really confusing to me, and that doesn't make it easy, but based on my values, which is that I don't want to lie to you. I want you to always feel safe to ask me a question and know that I will receive it with honesty and care, and to never make him feel like, not to never gaslight him, to never like pretend like something isn't a thing when it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Those are things that feel really steady and sure to me. And so while it's tricky, I feel clear there. I feel like I know what to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What feels very unsteady are things that it is easy for him to not know certain things. And that is where it's like, how much about what is happening in the world right now do I share with him, and how? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what makes it the impossible question, right? Like, and I think anybody who tells you anything definitive about like, well, this is what they should know, this is what your specific kid should know and when and how you should tell them is just like, that's, I don't buy into any of that. I think it's got to be, it's different based on the kid that you have. It's different based on the setup of the world that you're living in. It's different based on, I don't know. You said something interesting earlier about like, I think you said something along the lines of like, what is developmentally appropriate for him to know, but this thing is happening to other kids. And if they're experiencing it, but it's like, I don't think that it's developmentally appropriate for the kids who are experiencing it either, you know, like they shouldn't be experiencing that. And so, yeah, the horror of it is that this should not ever be happening.
This should not be happening to you. Yes.
This should not be happening. This should never happen. And how much of this horrific thing that I wish no child should ever experience at all, how much of that do I share with you? And what are you able to contain? Interrupting this episode to say thank you to everyone supporting the podcast on Patreon.
We love seeing your comments come through. We love getting to know each of you better. Like, you being there really means the world to us.
If you want to support the project financially, you can become a paying patron for as low as $5 a month. That's less than a latte.
But there's lots of free ways to support the podcast too. Sharing episodes, giving us one of those very pretty 5-star reviews, all of that makes a huge difference too.
And you can also join Patreon without paying. So the show notes will always be there for you. Okay, back to the show.
So let's pivot and think about, okay, what are the things that we are holding on to? You named like a few little tenets that you're holding on to about like, this is what I know and how to execute it isn't always clear, but these are the things I value. Is there anything else you want to point to or put on the map?
I think that the things I know for sure is I don't want to run away from hard things that he brings to me. I'm not going to pretend that something isn't horrible or hard. And I'm not going to gaslight him. And I believe that he is capable of holding a lot more the way that people shy away conversations around death or babies being made or hard emotions. I think kids are like so much more ready for and deserve answers to that. Like if he came to me and he was like, I heard all these things about horrible stuff happening in Palestine. Mm-hmm. I would be like, okay. Or like all these families are being torn apart. Like what's happening? My response would not be to shut it down or hide it. But it's kind of like, how do I bring this up? A thing that I have been thinking about lately is I've been feeling really appreciative of some specific books that we have read over the past few years that now are scripts that I hold to when conversations come up. And he has gotten a context for it, specifically the What Makes a Baby book by Corey Silverberg. And recently we had some really big specific questions about how babies are made. And I was so grateful for this book that we had read and we both had mutual context for, but I had never given him more information than he had asked for. And so what I'm realizing, and I want to be bringing more books into our home that set up the conversation. So then as questions come up, I have some steadiness around how to speak about it and that I'm beginning to give him a context. Because I've been giving him context for gender and babies and hard feelings and death through the books that we read since before he could conceptualize those ideas. But they're through like poem and metaphor. And so it's only giving him a taste so that he can ask the questions and then I can build on it. And so what I think that I'm wanting to pivot to is finding books that are referencing our history as a country, globally, things that are going on, how we want to care for vulnerable populations, so that then I, if nothing else, I have something to lean on, but then that could start the conversation. I think that's where I'm like, this is the thing, this is one concrete step that I want to take and shift. I've been so conscious of bringing books in around gender and sexuality and bodies and love and acceptance, which is like core tenets in our home. But there are other things that feel very important to us that I have not sought out
books on. So I feel like that is my big homework.
So, and also for our listeners, if you have book recommendations for any age group, I mean, like, let's get a good book list. I genuinely believe that storytelling is like one of the most powerful forces on earth. And I think there's nothing, I don't know if people would think like, oh, reading a book is like some kind of cop out or like some try. I think it is so smart and powerful and effective. And I think just like bringing in all of those stories so that we can understand our history, understand people, humanity, and from all different kinds of perspectives and points of view and like positions in the world, that I think that's incredibly powerful. So let's please get a long, good, juicy list of books we could be reading for 4 and 5 year olds, but older, right? Because I want to know what books to read next. I like that a lot. I think that's smart. What I've been thinking about, and this is like, I think this is like a slow boil for me of this shift in my parenting. I've been thinking about embodying and modeling values more than just naming them. I talked about this with my mom recently. I had like a recent Substack essay about like just pushing myself beyond my body's limits and like that kind of reckless rhythm of living. And I kind of, in the newsletter, I talked a little bit about how my mom lives that way. And I think she felt, I had this conversation with her yesterday about that and her being like, I really didn't want that for you. I wanted you to be able to rest. And I was like, yeah, it's interesting when there are things we want for our kids, but we don't embody ourselves and how, you know, like I do that all the time. I do that all the time with Otto. Like, I want this for you, but I don't know how to do it myself. So in light of this conversation, I've been thinking about what do I want to show Otto about the world, even when it's scary, especially when it's scary. And so just this last weekend was that big No Kings protest. And I ended up going with a old friend of mine, and it felt meaningful for me. Micah and Otto dropped me off at the protest. They saw the lines and lines and lines of people showing up to protest, and they dropped me off there. And something about seeing his parent show up to engage in the world publicly with other people, it meant something to me to get to share that with him. He didn't stay, for several reasons. I didn't know what the tone of it was going to be. I was a little scared to go, you know. Anytime I'm in a group of crowds now, I have the worry of guns in my mind. I just do. And so, they didn't stay with me. And also to go back to that, like putting posters in my kid's hand, you know, like that didn't feel necessarily right either. It meant something to me for him to witness just an engagement with the world and that we care about things enough to show up in this way. But while I was there, it was really meaningful for me to have the experience of being with people in real life versus just this like online environment. And part of it was just seeing like the range of people that were there. And for a while, I was telling you this before we hit record, but there was this like older white man next to me and my friend, and he was very, very conscious of his like position. He like referenced being an old white man several times, and he is like carrying a coffee cup from like a chain coffee shop and was like, I'm such a Johnson County guy, look at me with my coffee cup. But he was sharing a little bit of his story, which again goes back to the like being with people in real life and actually, you know, like I having the experience of sitting with someone who's different from me in several ways and hearing just like the stories that come out when you're standing next to a stranger. And he was saying that he had been so devastated after this election, and it really had forced him to grapple with what he really believes in and stands for, like what his values are, not just being against someone or not just being against a political party, but like, what are the things that I care about and I value? And then he like turned to us, me and my friend, and was like, so what are you here for? Not just a question of like, who are you against, but like, what do you care about enough to be here for? And it was such a good question. I really loved it. And I talked about like vulnerable people, and I am really, one of the things I'm really like, that's on the front of my mind is Medicaid cuts right now. And, I relied on Medicaid and food stamps for a lot of my early 20s. And that was like life-changing support for me. Absolutely. I fundamentally would not be where I am in my life right now if I hadn't had that catch, that safety net. And so I feel really passionately about that. And so I got to talk to him about what I care about. I care about vulnerable people. I care about people having access to healthcare, being able to like get basic healthcare. And that was really, really grounding for me. And it made me think about that framework for what, how I share this with Otto. So if I'm looking out, like, what are the things that make these horrors so horrifying to me? Because I care about this thing. And if I can frame it that way for my son, it's not so much about like, Bill Clinton was elected president and we hate Bill Clinton, right? It's not like that narrative. It's like, these are the things we care about and these are the things we value. We value vulnerable people. We value people feeling safe here. We value that, we don't want violence here, right? Like that felt like a useful framework for me. So I think the things I'm holding on to there are identifying the things that we value, what are the things that we really care about as a family, and then finding ways to embody that and act on that and live that out in a way that he can witness. So I think we are like in the very baby steps of figuring out how to model that and shifting the framework for like, I'm so mad about these things to like, these are the things that we value and care about. I feel better about sharing that. And I think like you said, like as we move through the world, I think of course there will be questions and there will be things that he learns about that we can talk about and that he will sort of let us know when it's time to engage that. But for now, we can point to the things that we care about and value endlessly. And figure out how to actually embody and model that more than just speak about it. And I like your idea of the storytelling too. I think that's a really powerful thing. Like part of the action is seeking out those stories and bringing them into our home to read together. So,
I know.
It's such a trip being a parent. There's so many things that it just reveals to you the places where you feel a little shaky.
I want so badly to do this exactly right because I love you so much. And I want so much for you to be protected. And I want you to grow up to put good into the world. And also, I will not do this right all the time. And there will be things that I do that are messing it up. And the pain of that is so excruciating. I don't know how to get accustomed to the pain of those two overlapping things.
Oh, yeah. In a like Pollyanna view, or like a like the thing that could be beautiful about this is I think that if you're paying attention, having a kid really reveals to you the things that you are shaky, where you're shaky, and offers you the opportunity to find some steadiness there. Because it's not hard for me to parent around tough topics where I feel sure. And not even that I feel, I guess that implies that I feel unsure about how I feel about the things happening in the world, because I feel pretty sure about them. But I feel unsure of the way that I'm engaging with them.
Yeah.
And I feel unsure. There's so many loud voices saying this is the right way to do it, and I don't want to get it wrong. And that often leads me to freeze and be inactive.
Mm-hmm. You know, sorry, this is a little unrelated to what you just said, but I'm also thinking about just like practically speaking, what it means to like hold on to our values and try to teach our kids how to engage with these things that are hard and thinking about being age appropriate. It like, in some ways it feels like, I wonder if some of this stuff shows up in very real ways that are just like much more relevant or to their little, to their small worlds. So I'm thinking about like why we care about what we see happening in Palestine, for example, thinking about like children and violence and war and what is devastating about that. In some ways, I think that that even like shows up on playgrounds, you know, like the thing, you know, the like there's violence that's not the same violence, obviously, but like the ways that we treat each other, even in these tiny little microcosms of humanity, and thinking like, I don't know that I need to tell Otto about like children's hospitals being bombed, but I can talk to him about like the way that we treat each other and what it, the difference between putting love and care and kindness into the world versus violence and acting rage on each other and like taking a fist and hitting another person, you know, like we can talk about that and now and have some of these frameworks that can carry out much farther out into the globe and in much greater scale, but like starting that conversation and having a framework or a script for the smaller thing that can kind of be built upon as they get older.
It's like we have to look at the big problem or issue and then work backwards from it. I think about this a lot with consent and bodies. And we are a regular conversation that my sister and I are having with our two boys who are a similar age is that like both of them get to choose what they do with their bodies. Because often they're like, they're not playing with me the way I want to play. And it's like, this person gets to choose how he plays. If no one's harming each other, or there was a moment recently where one kid wanted the other kid to wear matching clothes and that the other child didn't want to wear the matching clothes. And so, but we're talking about like, what is your bodily autonomy? Like this feeling is so hard and sad for you. And also,
yes,
it's such a tiny piece, but that's just going to keep building and building and building that like every person gets to choose about their own body. And you, just because you desire something does not mean that you get it.
Yes. Yes.
And that, but I feel like we've done so much work around consent and what this, the root of this issue is, like as adults or when they get bigger, and just teaching them, like teaching anatomical body parts. And we are, we do not demand immediate obedience from our child just because someone is an adult. There's so much space for questions and asking and autonomy over their body. That unless something is like life or death, I talk so often to Charlie, right now we're trying to get his fingernails trimmed. And I'm also like, your fingernails need trimmed. And also it's not dire in this moment. So we talk about why we trim our fingernails, what it is. And I say at a certain point, I'm going to have to. But if you don't want to right now, you can make some choices about your body. Because I don't want him to ever think that another, just because someone is bigger or older than him, they get to make a choice about his body. So we talk a lot about when I will, quote unquote, violate his body or like go past something that he wants because of my job is to keep him safe.
Yes. Yeah.
And then I intentionally make so much space for him to make his own decisions about his body, even when it drives me fucking crazy. But that feels like an example we can hold on to. So how do we like deconstruct that? And then I almost want to make like a worksheet where it's like, this is the big issue. Okay. How do I keep breaking it down and down and down and down and down to where it's as simple as being like, you don't both have to play with dinosaurs the same way.
Yes. Yes.
I understand you want to play this way and you want to play this way. Then you can play separately because no one's forced to play with you the way that you want to.
And I think that's the worst. Like you were very early on when we were saying what makes this hard is like, I don't want to be irresponsible. And I feel like this is responsible. This is like, you are the baby seeds that are going to grow up to be in charge of this planet. Let us give you these tools now. And these are the tools that will grow and build into something that hopefully means that you will be the ones that say we're not going to go to war. You're going to be the ones that make sure that we prioritize taking care of people and building a world where people can be different from each other. Like, if we can meet you there on the playground, in your bedroom, you know, with your friends now, that feels responsible and like a homework assignment.
Tangible.
Yes.
Well, and I think the work for us, for me, what I feel like my work is to sit with, okay, here are the big things that are breaking my heart. Understand the context for why they're happening and then start breaking it down backwards, because it is too big. It is too amorphous. It is too horrifying for me to fully explain to Charlie what is happening. And part of that is because I don't fully fucking understand. And then can I walk that backwards so that both I just start teaching him those life skills and we can start having some introductory conversations. But that requires me to be so clear about understanding the issue and what's underneath it, and then how to like walk it back and understand like, where did this begin? What's the root of it? And how do we change this? Like, I almost said it's a heart issue, as if I was like about to start preaching. Like, what is the belief about ownership or property or who belongs where?
Power.
Yes. Yeah, so what is our understanding of that? Like, we were at the creek the other day and Charlie was freaking out over spiders. And when there's spiders in our house, we kill the spiders. I know some people collect them and take them outside. I kill spiders in my house. But we were talking, I was like, we're in the spider's home. If you don't want to be near the spider is not harmful. It will not harm you. And you can move your body somewhere else. This is a spider's home. We're not going to hurt it here. And that felt like a moment of just like understanding. I don't even know that I can totally break down why that felt important, but
in some ways it seems like honoring nature.
Yeah. Just because you're bigger, like, and you feel a little bit afraid, this thing isn't going to hurt you. And we're in its home. This is not, we don't have dominion and ownership over all the spaces. In our specific house, we make a lot of decisions there.
Yeah.
It was like such a silly little example.
No, it's not silly though. That's the point, right? Like, it's obviously different than what we see happening out in the world at large. But identifying the tiny little roots of that isn't silly. I think that's where I'm landing. It's like recognizing the importance of that, the value of that. That's where that starts. These little people are going to grow up and be participants in the world. I want him to be mindful of, I don't know, like also our responsibility and obligations to each other. And thinking about power, thinking about like, what do we have a certain amount of power and what do you do with that power?
I feel like the way, like modeling that, just because I'm older and bigger or the parent, I am not the ultimate authority. Like, there's so much space for us to negotiate and communicate and for Charlie's feelings and opinions and ideas to be considered. And I hope that as I'm modeling that to him, that he would learn that about other people or not crave to be in a position of power so he doesn't have to feel helpless. For him to feel empowered no matter where he is, and to sense that he could work collaboratively with other people.
How did this feel?
I guess not as scary as I anticipated. I carry a lot of shame, guilt, I don't know, uncertainty about how I am showing up to the world right now and like what my responsibility is. So yeah, I think that's the part that made it feel really scary.
Well, because you really care.
Yeah, I do. It matters and I care and I feel like I could be doing it better and differently, but I don't always know how and I get frozen. And also sometimes I'm just struggling to exist as a person in itself, which feels like a cop out. And also it's just kind of feels like what's true right now.
Yeah, I think this is really hard and it looks different for different families.
I would love to have a big collection of like, what are all the possible ways? Because when someone comes in as like, this is the one specific way to like protest or be an activist or to exist in the world, I'm so wary of that. And I don't believe that is true. So I would love to hear lots of stories of all the different ways that people are doing this. And so that we can puzzle together the thing that works best for our family
and our own individual kids and what their sensitivities or their capacities are.
I agree.
And all those book recommendations, please, if you got them.
Yeah, I'm gonna go on some hunts, so I'll report back.
Okay.
Because that feels like a very tangible thing that I can do, and something that matters a lot to me is having a robust home library.
Yeah.
And to have some resources that we can pull on.
That sounds good. Thanks for diving into the tornado with me.
Nowhere I'd rather be.
Bye.
Bye.
You tell me when we're done, okay?
Bye.
This podcast is edited and perfected by the most beautiful wizard and my favorite dude, Micah Jones.
For all the show notes and a transcript of today's episode, check out our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast. This is our hub. It's where you can join the conversation and be part of our community.
If today's episode resonated with you or made you think of someone, share it.
And if you want to support the pod and also make us glow inside, go give a 5-star review on Apple. That would be so lovely.
Thank you for being here, for listening, for being a part of this community.
We love you so much.